You're listening to There Ought to Be a Law, the Center for Auto Safety podcast with Executive Director Michael Brooks, Chief Engineer Fred Perkins, and hosted by me, Anthony Simino. For over 50 years, the Center for Auto Safety has worked to make cars safer.
Good morning.
Yes, it is a good morning. Yay, everybody out in the world. We're going to start off with something positive today. How's positivity sounds good?
It's worth a shot.
Yeah, okay. Well, this is NHTSA's Distracted Driving Month. And part of that is NHTSA has released their estimates for fatalities in 2024. And it looks like it's decreased 3.8% compared to 2023. That's huge. I mean, the numbers are still ridiculously high. It's they're estimating now is 39,345 people died in traffic crashes in 2024. But like I said, this is an almost 4% decrease from the prior year. We're happy about that. Even a small decrease. Come on.
Well, it's hard to be happy about 39,000 some odd people dying.
Slightly more happy than 40,000 people.
That's true. Marginal improvement. Right. But still a lot of work left to be done.
Agreed. A part of this is NHTSA has it's actually a video that, you know, cynical me, I enjoyed, called Put the Phone Away. And it's a well done video, I think. I don't know if they're running as an ad on TV or anything, or it's just on the internet, where it shows basically what everybody listening to this has done at least once, where you're driving along and you're looking at your phone and like people sneak in, the people propping it on their steering wheel, and basically don't do that because you're gonna cause a crash. You know, you might survive, but the people you hit might not. And so it's you know, we're making slow progress. Michael's looking at me skeptically.
Distracted driving is a gigantic issue. I mean, the NHTSA data on it, you know, suggests that there were about 3,200 people killed and about 325,000 people injured in traffic crashes involving distracted drivers in 2023. You know, that makes up a little less than 10% of the crashes on the road. But the real issue here is that I think everyone tends to agree that distracted driving is vastly underreported, right? I mean, it's not something that drivers who are at fault are reporting to the police. It's something that they're hiding if they can. And, you know, distracted driving encompasses such a range of behaviors. You know, we're not just talking about phones here. You know, we're talking about, you know, using your touch screen in your vehicle while driving, using your radio, you know, messing with your climate control, talking to passengers, eating, you know, tending to a child or a pet in the back seat, daydreaming about your high school sweetheart, reaching for stuff around the car. So anything that takes your cognitive processing away from the act of driving is distracted driving. And I think there are pretty good arguments that the number of fatal crashes and injuries caused by these behaviors are far higher than what's reported and what, you know, what police are able to determine during crash report investigations. So it's a huge problem. And, you know, there are, you know, when we've talked about driver monitoring here before, there are systems that can be put in cars that can ensure that the driver is at least, you know, focusing their eyes on the road, has their hands on the steering wheel, is doing the things that it takes to remain focused while in the vehicle. It's not going to stop daydreaming and things like that. But as far as the physical activities that can be monitored by the vehicle, there are solutions either in place or on the way that can address those behaviors. And hopefully one day, we can get those into cars and start protecting people a little better from these behaviors. Right now, you know, we're almost wholly reliant on state laws around cell phone use. You know, there aren't any state laws regulating whether you can reach for something, whether you can tend to your child. I mean, there are, in some ways, if you can prove that was going on, you can, you know, make an argument that the person's driving recklessly, but there aren't specific ways to address all these different types of distracted human behavior. And it's a battle. And I would argue that distraction probably contributes to more than 10,000 fatalities every year if you really dug down and looked at all the crashes that take place.
Yeah, but Michael, isn't this in some sense a distraction itself? Because the biggest safety issues, and I'm not trying to minimize the people who are killed or injured because of distractions, but the biggest safety issues are associated with speeding and drunk driving. And, you know, we've talked about the technical solutions that can address this problem. We've talked about regulatory actions that can address those problems. And isn't the focus by NHTSA kind of self-congratulatory to say, oh, look, we're so good. We really want you to pay attention to the road. When in fact, you know, the bigger issues are looming out there and are just not being addressed by current NHTSA actions as well as they could be.
I mean, I don't know how much NHTSA can do in this area. You know, we filed a petition with NHTSA, God, almost 20 years ago now, that sought to ban the telematic device usage while you're in a vehicle. NHTSA has some authority issues there, right? They don't have the ability to regulate cell phones and that sort of thing.
What do you mean by telematic devices?
We were trying to prevent vehicles. At the time, vehicles were just beginning to integrate cell phone, the ability to talk on your cell phone and do other things on your cell phone into the cars. And we were trying to make sure that that didn't happen in a way that was unsafe. But NHTSA doesn't have the authority to, you know, make everyone put an app on their phone that prevents them from using it while they're driving. It basically, they only have the authority to address things that are like OEM vehicles, right? And so we were trying to get at that. The petition was denied by NHTSA because I just don't think they were willing to open that can of worms. But, you know, it could also be argued, Fred, that distracted, you know, when you're drunk, your alcohol problem, or when you're on drugs, your drug issues are doing a very similar thing to distraction. I mean, you're taking your mind off the road through a chemical means versus, you know, movement or the other ways that the distraction occurs. So
yeah,
it's vastly underreported. So it could be that distracted driving is every bit as big of a killer as driving while inebriated or driving while I'm losing my mind here. Sorry.
Okay.
But I think that it's probably on equal footing in some respects. I mean, the fact that it's so underreported means we don't really know the full scope of the problem. You know, we don't know how many people died while eating McDonald's cheeseburgers and not focusing on the road in the past year, because that kind of thing is rarely going to be picked up or reported in NHTSA's fatality counts every year. So it's a really tough issue. NHTSA tends to hit on the cell phone part of it because we see a lot of young people who are just getting into cars who haven't really found the correct balance between cell phone usage and driving, which is should be no cell phone usage while driving. And so I think it really helps actually that NHTSA highlights this and does public relation campaigns to show that, you know, this is a huge problem. And they also have, you know, months that are dedicated to those other issues, anti-speeding and driving while drunk or on drugs. So this is just the month where they focus on the distracted driving.
I've noticed that recently Google's going out of its way to distract me while driving, because I'll use Google Maps on my phone, and the last, I don't know, couple of weeks, it'll ask me questions like, hey, there's cops reported ahead. Are they still there? And it wants you to click on the touch screen away from the driving and be like, yes, still there. Nope, gone. or X, get this away. And then it keeps, hey, there's traffic reported up ahead. Is it still there? There's a stalled vehicle up ahead. Is it still there? And I had to stop the car eventually and dig through multiple menus and find where I could turn this nonsense off. So I had to turn off every feature in Google Maps. So I haven't driven since. I have no idea if it still works. I'll have to drive the old.
I didn't realize Google Maps was doing that. Waze obviously does that. It asks you if the hazard is still there or the animal or the whatever it is, which is definitely a source of distraction.
It's definitely crazy.
As a helpful hint to our listeners, just ignore that crap. Okay, it'll take care of itself. It's like adolescence and snow. It'll take care of itself if you just wait long enough.
Yeah, but it's so annoying and frustrating, cold, and wet. So AAA has come out with a study, and I don't really understand how this works, but the study, their article is titled, Do Smartphone Apps Hold the Key to Safer Drivers? And it talks about how research shows that speeding, aggressive driving, and distraction contribute to a significant number of crashes. And so it seems that they're, you know, they did a whole survey of people, and it seems they're thinking that they can have a smartphone track to see if you're doing aggressive driving or not. I don't know. Am I driving aggressively or am I mad at my phone? I'm throwing it around. I don't know. I don't understand exactly how this would work.
Well, the simple answer is it won't.
There we go. Next topic.
I mean, look at the world, the way the world works. Lower deaths are associated with speed restrictions and restructuring highways and city centers so that you separate pedestrians with physical barriers from speeding vehicles. It's got nothing to do with people looking at their cell phones. So I think this headline is just a distraction from the real issues that are associated with traffic safety in the United States.
I felt it was a distraction too while I was trying to read it on my phone going 50 miles down the road.
Come on. So what they're doing here is, you know, it's not a cell phone. I don't think there's anything in this study that had people using their cell phones while driving. This study was basically you allow your cell phone to track what you're doing. I mean, I use in my family, we use this app called Life 360. And I think it's through Verizon's cell phone service. And at the end of every drive that my daughter takes, she'll get a report that says, or at the end of every drive I take, I'll get a report that says, okay, here's what happened while you're driving. You had rapid acceleration during this period. You had this hard braking here. You were speeding here. And it counts those behaviors up. And then at the end of every week, I get a report back that says, here's your weekly driving summary. It says basically you were a great driver or you had room for improvement or you sucked. And what AAA is doing was studying groups that use this information to see what incentivize people to do a better job driving and what improved driver behavior. And I don't think there's really any surprise here, you know, that 67% of the participants reported that the tactic that most likely changed their behavior was the potential to earn money driving. So if effectively they were rewarded for improving their driving week over week based on the behaviors recorded by these apps. Also, you know, they found that the weekly driving feedback and the dashboard that, you know, let them know, hey, last week you drove terrible. People reported, you know, there's a problem there. People don't evaluate their driving great, but they reported, you know, 45% that the dashboard coming to them weekly incentivized them to change their behavior. 53% reported that the feedback via text message incentivized them to change their behaviors for the good. So, you know, maybe there's something to this, you know, that it's almost like a game in some ways. You know, every week you try to get better. If you're getting paid, Apparently, that's something that can really incentivize people to think about their driving behaviors. And we see this in the way that the insurance companies have rolled out some of their monitoring programs where, you know, these are the same metrics they're looking at the insurance company, hard braking, rapid acceleration, speeding, to determine whether or not, you know, you qualify for discounts on your insurance. You know, Progressive and a number of other companies have rolled out programs that allow drivers to sign up and have their driving behavior monitored by their insurance companies in the hopes that they could be rewarded for their behavior. There's some commercials that you might have seen during on Sunday afternoons during football about that. So it's, you know, this is something that could work. I guess the question is, where's all that money going to come from to pay these people to drive safer? I'm not sure if the industry is interested in subsidizing that effort. Maybe the insurance industry could dig in a little deeper on that, but I don't know how interested they are in, you know, paying people to drive safely. But it's an interesting study, and it shows, you know, at least shows some of the things that could be done via cell phones, which we all have on us, to ensure that people are driving more safely and to try to improve their behavior.
Sure. Thank you. You know, but you got to assume that if they're, I actually like working with your younger guys and your unbridled optimism.
Michael's a sponsor of Big Brother, let's be honest here.
But you know, look at the insurance industry. If they have a profit margin that is their target, the only way they can raise money to pay these relatively safe drivers is to tax the rest of us to generate the revenue that they're going to hand over to these relatively safe drivers. I'm all for safety. I'm not necessarily all for paying higher rates so that they can provide incentives to people to do the right thing.
Have you considered stop driving into deer? So I considered using one of these apps because I was like, we've talked about this before, and I thought this is a really good idea. But then I thought about it, just the environment I live in, there to get on and off certain roads, you have to do hard acceleration. If you don't, there's no way you're getting on. And the only times I've ever done hard braking is not because of something I did. It's because of what some asshole in front of me did. And I'm saving our lives. So I'm like, that's going to count against me. Like, either that or I can only drive at 3 a.m. when there's less traffic, no need for crazy acceleration.
I'd be interested in a comparison of the insurance statistics on those types of behaviors, you know, in New York City versus in, you know, Coeur d'Alene, Iowa or Idaho or somewhere like that, where it would be really interesting to see how the same driver fares in different driving environments and what their statistics look like.
Right, because in here I'm trying to get to a supermarket. Out there and in Idaho, I might be trying to get to my militia meeting. So we were talking about, okay, if we control speed, you know, we reduce speed, we can reduce deaths. We've talked about this 100 times. Fred claimed there's something called physics. No one knows if that's true or not. That says this is the truth. Well, the French people over at Renault, they have put out a big change for their Clio drivers. Clio is a type of car that kind of looks like a Toyota Corolla hatchback, but it's smokes cigarettes and eats cheese. They're not all winners. But they have put in a speed limiter that will limit the maximum speed of these vehicles to 68 miles per hour. I don't know what that translates into kilometers per hour.
About 100. It's roughly 100.
Okay.
And 105 or so.
So this is pretty cool. So you can still use your ADAS and you can still use your cruise control and whatnot, but it will limit the cars to speed, which, you know, sounds like a good idea. I mean, this car would be useless in the state of Connecticut where everybody drives like a goddamn maniac, but...
it would be useless. You know, it would be useful in America, but nobody would buy it, I don't think. This is happening in the UK, where I think there's probably, I don't even know. We're going to see how Renault fares with the system. But functionally, what they're doing is something that, you know, we've made this point on a number of occasions on the podcast. Why do manufacturers allow you to set your cruise control at at rates that are far above the speed limit. You know, there's an argument that you should be able to set it within, you know, 5 miles per hour, 7 miles per hour, the speed limit, and speed a little. But, you know, there are a lot of systems out there that allow you to set not just your cruise control, but your ADAS systems, your adaptive cruise control, and, you know, the convenience driving, setting those systems to speeds that are well above the speed limit. And we think that should be limited, right? You shouldn't be able to program your vehicle to break the law. And unfortunately, you know, that's the way that cruise control has been made forever. And that's the way that a lot of the ADA systems that are coming out operate. They don't say, hey, you can't set ADS up. You can't use autopilot, for instance, when you're going over the speed limit. So it's a programmed in function that allows drivers to break the rules of the road, which, you know, we've seen NHTSA do recalls on other things like that. Tesla had to do a recall because it was rolling through stop signs. Why aren't they having to do a recall? Because they're allowed to set their speed at rates that could be considered reckless driving in certain states. So, this is the type of technology that I don't think America is willing to accept at this point. This is essentially a governor. We have states with speed limits that are, you know, 12 miles per hour higher than the maximum speed that these Renaults can travel. So that's this is something that obviously is taking place in another country, because I don't think it would work here.
There's a road I have to drive on regularly where there's the police always hang out on it. So that's why I like using ADAS there, because the speed limit's 25 miles per hour. I set it for 25 miles per hour and watch every car behind me get angry. Like, it's unbelievable, but it's like,
that's a thing.
Yeah. It's a tight residential street where the UPS truck will take up an entire lane. There's, children walking around, but the police are always hanging out on this. I mean, at times they've done the, is your car inspected check, but I watch people pull over regularly and, you know, a couple times a month, I'll drive down this road, set it right there, because I'm like, there's no issues here. I'm not gonna be one they pull over. And invariably, someone will get behind me, flashing their lights, honking their horn, being like, "Come on, I want to kill that kid. Let's go." So yeah. I don't know what to.
No, I mean that's a huge problem. Driverless cars frustrate people because of their sticking to the speed limit. And I think it was even noted, maybe it was the Insurance Institute, when they looked at intelligent speed assistance, and, you know, staying around the speed limit is going to trigger people who want to speed.
Anthony, are you sure they're not just congratulating you on your safe approach to public safety?
That's a good point. I am getting the Hawaiian good luck sign.
Yeah, and there's probably getting, you know, your number one sign from time to time as well.
That's absolutely right.
It's all in how you look at it, I think.
Yeah. Whatever. I'm not getting a ticket. Because, you know, I have a valid driver's license. So there's this article we passed around from the New York Times where I asked the question, because there's technology right now. If you've been convicted of DUIs or whatnot, you've got to blow into the pipe and before your car will say, "Yay, you're sober enough to drive," or "You're smart enough to get a 6-year-old to blow into this pipe before you got into your car." Don't do that if you have one of these in your vehicles. And so I asked Michael, I was like, "Hey, isn't there something where you have to like insert your driver's license in the car and just then you can see, hey, is this a valid driver's license? Is it active? Can you drive the car?" There's no such thing. And I've been in hotel rooms where it's confused me because you have to stick the hotel key in a wall socket for the lights to work.
Yeah,
that is confusing. And then you look like an idiot. You have to go on the front desk, like, "My lights don't work." And they come up and like, "Here you go, sir." And you're like, so that doesn't exist for cars. And that's unfortunate because, quoting from this New York Times article, Miriam Yarami should not be driving at all. But on Saturday, even with her license suspended, Miss Yarami, a 32-year-old professional wig maker and social media influencer, we needed that, got behind the wheel of a blue Audi sedan. Her trip down Ocean Parkway in Brooklyn ended in 3 deaths, that of a 35-year-old woman and 2 of her children's age 8 and 5. And so this is like she'd racked up over $10,000 in fines for parking and speed camera violations, and, you know, speeding in school zones, failing to stop at red lights, and just being a shit driver. And now, unfortunately, people are dead. It seems, in my mind, why not a little thing? You just pop your driver's license in there. And
well, I mean, there's another thing that I think would, is being passed as we speak in states. I think it was Virginia a couple of weeks ago became the first state in America to do something kind of similar to the alcohol interlock device that you're talking about. But it is basically a speeding, not an interlock device, but it's intelligent speed assistance. We've discussed many times before, but it's active intelligent speed assistance. So rather than just the driver getting a warning, or in a cascading series of warnings, the faster they go,
they have to drive a Renault.
In some ways, I mean, this technology limits the vehicle to either at the speed limit. There's a bill being proposed in New York that's 5 miles per hour over the speed limit, but it is actively limiting drivers from exceeding the speed limit. And it's in Virginia, if you get a reckless driving ticket, your license will be suspended, but the judge has the option to allow you to continue to driving restricted, like to work and to necessary functions, right? But you have to have this device installed in your vehicle that prevents your car from exceeding the speed limit. That was passed, signed into law by Governor Youngkin about a week or two ago. And then last week, Georgia passed a very similar law that's going to allow that to take place in Georgia. Now New York is proposing this law as well. So we're seeing a movement to get, you know, this isn't the intelligent speed assistance which Europe has, which is, you know, you can turn off every time you get in the vehicle. This is basically forcing vehicles to stay around the speed limit, which is something I think a lot of us could use. You know, when we discuss intelligent speed assistance, I often bring up the fact that problem speeders are going to ignore the bells and whistles. They're going to turn the technology off, if that's an option, every time they get into these vehicles. And ultimately, while the technology can help drivers who want to be good understand when they're exceeding speed limits and, you know, rein in their behavior, it's not going to impact the people who truly want to speed and the people who think that speeding is one of their many freedoms not listed in the Constitution. So these are good things that are happening in Virginia, Georgia, if Governor Kemp signs the bill, and hopefully in New York, and hopefully more states are going to get onto this and get on top of people who are racking up speeding tickets. We saw this problem in Washington, D.C., you know, resulting in a collision on Rock Creek Parkway a couple of years ago that killed a couple of people because this person had racked up thousands of dollars in speeding fines and nothing was ever done to find them or to stop them from driving. It appears the same things happened in New York. We just really need to focus on enforcing speed violations and getting these people off the road.
So, Michael, is there a limit you think in terms of the number of tickets someone gets or the dollar amount or what's the threshold there?
I mean, if you see a vehicle exceeding the speed limit by 30 or 40 miles per hour on a camera, I think you have a duty right then to go after that person, you know, in some way. I mean, take away their license plate, get them off the road, get them, you know, get one of these systems into their vehicle so that they can't do that anymore. I mean, it's, the data is there. It's live. It's coming in. You know, this car was just speeding at a very advanced rate on a road in your jurisdiction. Obviously, there are going to be some, you know, law enforcement can't go after every single speeder, but the worst of the worst, and especially people who are racking up multiple violations at high speeds, I don't understand what's stopping. You know, we have license plate readers everywhere. We have registered addresses for these cars. I don't understand what's stopping law enforcement from going after these persistent speeders who are really, at this point, in the data, a as big or bigger threat as drunk driving.
Okay. The reason I ask is because in the New York Times article, I wasn't aware that all of the speed camera and parking violation data, it's all public data. And there's a website called How's My Driving, and you can enter in anyone's license plates and pull it up. And so I did that with my own license plate. and there's this woman I live with who, good, it was excessive speeding. None of these are excessive speeding, which is great there. But, you know, there was just that one speed camera put in, and she kept doing 30 and a 20. And yeah, they're just like, you know, it's enough of them. Great. They're not going to take away my driver's, my license plates.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to come after you for 30 and a 20.
Damn right. I didn't do it. It wasn't me.
But, you know, if you have multiple, you know, this the car that was involved in the crash and the fatalities in New York in the story, I believe, had, you know, multiple violations, yeah. Multiple school zone violations, which are a pretty big red flag. The driver's not paying any sort of attention and doesn't care about human life all that much. So we're really, really just going after the worst of the worst who cause, you know, an outsized proportion of the fatalities and injuries on our roads.
Got it. What do you got, Fred?
I'm going to slip into the towel here because Anthony asked a perceptive question about why can't you turn? How did you say that exactly, Anthony?
Oh, so this my inspiration for your towel is yesterday I'm driving home on the highway, and every now and then I have a bit of a death wish, and I just think, hey, I'm doing 50. I was doing the speed limit, I'm fine, but I was thinking, hey, can I take my steering wheel and just yank it all the way to the left? One, would my car allow me to do that? And two, would it be awesome?
Okay, so first question is, would your car allow you to do that? Sadly, the answer is yes.
Awesome.
Second question is, would that do some terrible damage? And that answer is probably yes. But that leads me to an extension of what Michael was saying, which is technology is being developed now to make cars self-driving, I've heard. And in order to do that, you have to be aware of speed limits. You have to be aware of the performance limits of the vehicle, a lot of things. And there's some arguments about whether or not they are capable of considering everything to operate safely. But a very simple extension of that technology would be to act as a supervisory driver on standard vehicles so that it basically acts as an anti-collision warning system and anti-collision mitigation. So with such a system in place, Anthony, if you drove down the street and yank the steering wheel to the left when you're going 60 miles an hour, the car would say, nah, you can't do that. And it would either put the brakes on or it would steer you straight ahead or do something else. There are anti-collision warning systems in all kinds of airplanes, right? There's terrain warning systems. They have stall warning systems. There's a lot of things they do in there to keep people alive, and they operate automatically, and they don't interfere with the human operation of the vehicle, except when the human operator is trying to do something stupid or hazardous. There's absolutely no push anywhere that I know of in America, or anywhere in the world, actually, to take this adaptive driving technology that's being developed for self-driving vehicles and turn it into a supervisory safety collision avoidance system for standard vehicles. You could easily put on a map in front of the driver the road ahead of you and identify with colors or some other way the intersections that you cannot turn to because the steering radius is too small, you're going too fast. Somehow that maneuver would be outside of the safe operating envelope of the vehicle. And as we discussed briefly earlier, Michael, yeah, you could stop the vehicle if it's going to do something stupid. You could anticipate that you're driving too fast for the hairpin turn up ahead. All of this technology is currently available, and I think that that would go a long way towards solving a lot of the traffic problems we've talked about. Somebody driving off the road because they're sleepy. Well, if your car senses where the road is and it's sensing that you're headed in a bad direction, regardless of the state of your own intention, the vehicle could sense that you're entering a hazardous area because it's going to violate either the safe operating envelope of the car or the particular circumstances of that you know, right hairpin turn or right wing intersection, or there's a dog in the middle of the road, all these kinds of things that you might overlook could be there in a supervisory computer that would not in any way interfere with your normal human operation of the vehicle. So that's a pretty long answer to your question, Anthony, but it seems like something that is a tremendous market opportunity for somebody to put in a car and say, hey, this car is just like the car that you drove yesterday, except it's better because it may sense a dangerous situation that you're not aware of and keep you from dying. That seems like a pretty good sales technique to me, but
yeah, Brett, and I'll add to that, that there's, it's not like this is an idea that's out of left field. You know, the electronic stability control functions a lot like that, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's right.
It detects whether when the vehicle's losing control and applies the brakes on certain wheels to help steer the vehicle and slow it down and prevent it from crashing. This is something that has reduced the rollover rate significantly and saved thousands and thousands of lives since it was mandated by NHTSA. So I don't see why we can't have other things that can do the same type of life-saving work inside of our vehicles.
Right, and the software has been done. The software is developed. It's out there. It's just a question of putting different parameters into play to engage your vehicle. The just the anti-swerve, Michael, is right there. The automatic emergency braking is already there. The pedestrian automatic emergency braking is coming right along. So, you know, they're making some tentative forays into this arena, but I don't understand why, you know, Waymo or Google that owns Waymo doesn't go after this hammer and tongs, because instead of looking at 1,000 vehicles a year they want to put out, they'd be looking at 1 million vehicles a year and 1 million copies of this software. It's a huge market opportunity for somebody.
This was an amazingly thoughtful answer to an amazingly stupid question. This was great, because let's be honest, that was a dumb question. This was just me distracting my brain while driving, but I loved your response. Listeners, if you have similar dumb questions that you want Fred to challenge Fred to come up with a very thoughtful responses, send them to contact@autosafety.org. Hey, and while you're taking a break from the podcast, you're like, hey, yeah. The stock market hasn't totally tanked, right? Go to autosafety.org and click on donate. And that would be great. But I think you're right, Fred, because I've pointed out 1,000 times in the show that the economics for a Waymo, for a GM Cruise, rest in peace, and similar things, it's not there. It doesn't work. But if you were going to sell this as an add-on to a car, I think Volvo or somebody else who like realizes we can sell safety, they'd be making bank off of this. Because you're right, the software is already done. And you know what the expensive part of software is? Just doing it once, copying it.
That's right. That's right. And the other thing is, it doesn't have the requirement to be perfect in its application, right? It just has to make people better. It just has to make people safer.
And that's the motto of the show.
The perfection that they're trying to achieve with self-driving vehicles is never going to happen. So why don't you take your investment, Waymo, into the software and put it someplace where you can actually earn some money? Thank
there
you.
We go.
You're welcome.
Yeah, Bravo. And license it to manufacturers and charge them by a subscription.
You can definitely do that. I am getting a subscription to Nautical Charts because they're updated daily with weather and stuff. Well, I don't see any reason why not. But this, I think, leads us right into the gaslight illumination. Fred, I'm going to guess yours is going to be Waymo. And I'm going to guess that you've, you can just say Waymo and be done.
Well, I'm going to ask a couple of background questions to you guys. Did you ever see a tow truck speeding to a crash site?
Yes.
How did you know? How did you know it was speeding to a crash site?
Because it passed me. And I was going the speed limit or a little above.
Right, but was there anything else characteristic about the tow truck that made you think?
Well, its lights were flashing.
Flashing lights, I see. Okay.
Yeah,
All right. Follow-up question. Did you ever see police directing traffic around a crash site where this tow truck perhaps arrived?
Yes.
And what are the things that you see there? And how did you know?
Flashing lights.
You see flashing lights. You'll probably see a flare or two on the road
right.
on occasion, that kind of thing. Anything to attract the attention of oncoming traffic.
And usually some physical obstructions. The police will park their car across the lane, or a fire truck will do that, right? So
sure.
Physical barriers, flashing lights, distinctive, a signature of that scene. That's all to protect the public from unsafe interaction with dangerous machinery and operations, right? Nobody wants to allow a car to get in between a tow truck and the vehicle is trying to pull by ducking under the cable. That would be a stupid thing to do. So now Waymo's got a campaign running. And I don't know if you've ever seen a driverless Waymo approaching an intersection, but Waymo had somebody take a picture of that. And have you ever seen evidence of a Waymo acting erratically or going the wrong way in traffic or perhaps
yes.
running into a telephone pole?
Repeatedly.
So, you know, stuff happens, right? But in this new PR campaign, a YouTube video shows a Waymo vehicle in an urban intersection approaching about a half dozen pedestrians and numerous vehicles ahead. The text on this image reads, quote, witnessed a young man give a small thank you wave to the Waymo I'm in for stopping as they cross the street. Oh, that's so nice. Superimposed on the image is the picture of a cute 9-year-old-ish Cora. Her relationship to the cutesy scene is not provided, nor is the person giving the affirmative wave. But I guess we're supposed to think that her 9-year-old appraisal of Waymo safety is self-evident proof of safety.
That's an amazing advertisement for the PR company that came up with this nonsense.
I do. What could possibly be more compelling objective evidence of safety standard compliance than that? There's no barriers. There's no warning signs. There's no protected travel lanes, as would be required in any other context for hazardous machine operation in public spaces. This really stands out to me. There's another YouTube clip that I've seen, and I have this reference. I'll send it to you for posting. It shows Katie Couric giddily, quote, oh my gosh, this is so great, close quote, riding in a Waymo to an interview with Waymo's Vinya Srinivasan, excuse the pronunciation. You need to subscribe to her podcast to see the interview. I didn't do that, but I'm confident that relentlessly addressed with the hard-hitting journalism for which she's known, the outstanding and unresolved Waymo safety issues. So Waymo has apparently decided that cute videos about the Waymo tagline, future of transportation, is a better strategy than actually addressing the real public safety issues caused by its vehicles, and therefore wins this week's nomination for Gaslight of the Week.
That's pretty good. My takeaway from that is that the Waymo division thinks that the leadership at Alphabet are assholes and we can pull this obvious bullshit on them and they'll go along with it. Hey, so if you happen to be in the C-suite at Alphabet, are you going to fall for this con? Because you keep doing to billions and billions of dollars a year. Michael, what's your gaslight?
All right, so I'm going back to the NHTSA's 2024 preliminary fatality estimates, and there is a quote from NHTSA Chief Counsel Peter Simshauser, who started out great, ended on a gaslight. So he says, it's encouraging to see the traffic fatalities are continuing to fall from their COVID pandemic highs. Yes. Traffic road fatalities, however, remain significantly higher than a decade ago, and America's traffic fatality rate remains high relative to many peer nations. Absolutely. Great statement. Yes, the traffic fatalities remain really high. If you look back at 2013 and 14, I think we were down into around 32,000 road fatalities for those years. We're still nudged right up against 40,000, even after the good report for last year. But he goes on to say, to reduce fatalities further, US DOT is working closely to partner with the law enforcement community to enhance traffic enforcement on our roads, including speeding, impairment, distraction, and lack of seatbelt use. That's where it kind of goes off the rails because, you know, first of all, the US DOT and NHTSA already commit, you know, millions and millions and millions of dollars in grants to the law enforcement community every year. In fact, those grants may outweigh the amount that NHTSA is spending on research, rulemaking, and enforcement of its own. So that's nothing new, but they're saying, you know, what NHTSA is failing on here is they cite speeding, impairment, distraction, and lack of seatbelt use. Well, NHTSA Europe already has intelligent speed assistance going into its cars now. It's required. NHTSA, nothing. Supposedly, they're still researching it. Nothing's going on there. I don't expect anything to happen with intelligent speed assistance under this administration. Things don't look good there. We see states having to fill in the gaps. We just talked about that on the podcast. Impairment. NHTSA put out an advance notice of proposed rulemaking on alcohol detection. The technology is there right now to start detecting the worst of the worst for alcohol impairment on the roads. NHTSA shuffling its feet, not getting that mandated, not getting that in cars anytime soon. Distraction, driver monitoring could address this. NHTSA's not even touching that right now, not even thinking about mandating that right now. They're continuing their messaging, relying on state enforcement, but they're not doing anything technologically to get that stuff into cars and prevent it. Lack of seatbelt use, NHTSA just finished taking 10 years plus to get rear seatbelt reminders into vehicles. So perhaps rather than continuing to, you know, work with the law enforcement community, which can only do so much to enhance traffic safety, NHTSA needs to get on the ball with its rulemakings, with its enforcement, and make sure that these problems are being taken care of in the area in which it should be doing more to regulate the vehicle itself versus, you know, traffic enforcement in the states and police enforcement. And that is my gaslight of the week.
That's a good one.
Yeah, we like that one. I mean, Fred's ahead because it's Waymo and I'm scoring this. But my gaslight this week is going to be a little guy named Trevor. That's right. Trevor Milton. He founded a company called Nikola. Not a throat lozenge company, but they were supposed to be a EV truck company where they're trying to be self-driving too. I think they're going to be self-driving EV 18-wheelers.
It sounds like he would have promised anything you were willing to buy.
Absolutely. So basically he was Elon without the checkbook. Because what this guy did is, and don't fact check me on this because I'm going to get details a little wrong, is he's like, hey, it'd be cool if we had a self-driving EV futuristic truck. And his background was, like Elon, not in engineering. But he instead, what he did is essentially went on the equivalent of Fiverr, hired somebody in some Eastern Europe company, be like, hey, draw me this cool picture. And they did. And then he went to, you know, people with more money than brains and said, look what we're building. I have this. And these people are like, here you go. Somebody who has no experience with anything. Here you go. We'll give you a bunch of money and you do this. And, the thing they produced was, they wheeled a truck that they didn't even make up a hill and then rolled it down a hill and said, look, it's working. Isn't that truck working? It's great, man. It's so cool. Well, this was fraud, 100% fraud. And he'd been sentenced to 4 years in prison, was fined $1 million. He'd been appealing this case. And he went to another con artist who's a little too heavy on the makeup, Donald Trump, and said, hey, the judges, they're the activist judges, they're after me. I did this con like you've done, and pardon me. And he went, you're a good boy. Buy my meme coin, and Dominus Bobiscum, you're pardoned. So that's a multi-layered gaslight, because it's a nesting doll of assholes. That's my answer, and I win.
That's a good one. Do you have to go to Mar-a-Lago to find these stupid rich people? Because I've got a lot of bad ideas I'd like to get overfinanced.
I've got a ton of them. Cars that only turn left at 50 miles per hour.
There you go. That's a good one.
Because the liberals, they're out to get me. Oh, boy. Hey, I know, listeners, you've been patient. You've been waiting for it the entire time. What's the latest Tesla update? They suck. Actually, this is a fun little aside. My wife was in Vogue the other day. She was in Vogue magazine. That's right. She was holding up a sign that said, fuck Musk. That's right. And they got the back of her head. But the entire sign. So, got a serious one here. So people are like, I don't want my Cybertruck because it's been recalled 8 times and people think I'm a Nazi. So how do I get rid of this thing? And the challenge is that they try to go back to the dealership and the Tesla dealer is like, we don't want it. Don't bring it here. And you can't sell it because no one will give you anywhere near the value that you've paid for it. So some Tesla dealers are saying file a lemon law complaint on it. Now that's interesting. Michael, do you happen to know anything about lemon laws?
Yeah, I mean, lemon laws are an awesome thing that came about in the late 80s through the 90s. And there's one in about every state, although some state lemon laws are terrible, don't work that great. Some states are great. And essentially, they're going to protect you if you buy a lemon, which is defined depending on the state you're in. You know, it could be a vehicle that fails 2 or 3 times in the first year, first 18 months, or has like one critical safety issue. And so assuming that these Cybertrucks, if you own a Cybertruck, you continue to have the same problem again and again within the first year or 18 months or 2 years of ownership, you can take that vehicle back to the dealer and say, look, this is a lemon. I meet the criteria under the state's lemon law. You've got to buy it back. Which is, you know, interesting that, you know, Tesla wouldn't take them as trade-ins and force consumers into the lemon law, because I think Tesla probably stands to lose more having to pay back or buy back these vehicles under the lemon law. And then when they do that in most states, you're going to have a brand on the title of the vehicle saying, you know, this is a lemon, which is going to prevent it from being resold down the road. So it's really odd, that approach. I don't really understand why Tesla's doing it that way, but, you know, I also don't understand why they built the Cybertruck in the first place. So nothing really makes sense over there.
Michael, isn't there a Washington-based nonprofit that is uniquely associated with the proliferation of lemon laws?
That would be us. And, you know, you can see it right in our logo, the lemon. That was a big movement by us and some other consumer advocates back in the day. We published the lemon book and, you know, even what to do with your bad car. A number of back in the day when people used to read books, we published a lot of materials for consumers. We collected consumer stories and went to legislatures all over America to get lemon laws passed. And they've been a great success, despite a number of states trying to trim lemon law protections back. I'm looking at you, Gavin Newsom, in California last year. The lemon laws have been incredibly successful and are a great backstop for consumers when they're buying a new car. Some states have used car lemon laws, but new car lemon laws have been a great success for consumers.
So you can go to autosafety.org and click on lemon laws and find all about the lemon laws in your states. And you can dig in and learn history, like the Moss-Magnuson Act and a whole bunch of other things that I vaguely remember, because I am not the resident expert Michael Brooks is. So, Michael.
You're right. It's the Magnuson-Moss Act.
Ah,
so
well.
Your point.
There it is. So you're saying, wait, I can keep bringing my Cybertruck back if I have the same issue, not new issues. So what
it depends on the state. So like some states you have to have, you know, like 2 or 3 or 4 reoccurrences of the same problem.
Okay.
Basically, if the dealership can't fix that problem, your car is presumed to be a lemon. Also, a large number of states have a safety clause where if you have one incident of a life-threatening safety issue in your vehicle, the manufacturer may not even get a chance to repair, or they have one chance and they have to repair it, or it can be declared a lemon.
So could one of the problems be, so, hey, I managed to collect $100,000 and buy this car. Now the problem is I have no friends.
I don't think that would qualify, no.
Oh, they don't let me go to yeshiva anymore. Is that part of it? No?
Well, Well, the problem is that having no friends is not uniquely associated with owning a Cybertruck, unfortunately. There are many other ways to accomplish that goal.
Buy any other Tesla. Speaking of which, so Tesla, the Model Y, which is surprisingly was the best-selling vehicle in the world last year, 2 years ago?
No.
Wasn't?
EV, maybe?
Yeah. Best-selling EV. No, sorry, best-selling EV. Yes, you're right. Now they can't sell any of them because you used to be able to go on Tesla's website and be like, oh, can I get this? And it'll tell you how soon it's available. And people started noticing, oh, they're all available immediately. And that's clearly pointing out that there's excessive inventory on these dealer lots. And so what did Tesla do? They hid that. So they won't tell you if one's available anymore because people are pointing out that the emperor has no clothes. So that's
just desserts. That's really all I had to say.
Yes. And then the last Tesla thing we have here is from Futurism, which has a really cool font, an article titled, "There's Something Very Sketchy Going On with Self-Driving Teslas Running Down Motorcycles." And I think it's because of video games and Elon Musk, but it could be something else. Quoting from the article,
I think it's because of the bad, you know, that we've continued to see Teslas hitting motorcycles when they're on autopilot. This article looks at the data that's been uploaded to NHTSA through the Standing General Order and found, I think, 5 motorcycle fatalities. On autopilot, you know, I've gotten calls from professional motorcyclists who say they have been cut off multiple times by Teslas engaged with autopilot engaged or full self-driving engaged. And it goes back to what we've talked about ad nauseum, which is that Tesla's relying on cameras and not LiDAR, not other systems. They don't have sensor fusion. They don't have a lot of the things that are going to be necessary for safe autonomous operation. And yet we're allowing them to just go on roads and turn this stuff on and not recognize motorcyclists and kill them. It's a problem. It's something that NHTSA hasn't done enough in its enforcement activity to stop. Tesla's not doing enough to make sure that it's seeing motorcyclists and if it can't see motorcyclists, you know, you got to question whether it's going to see bicyclists and other pedestrians. So it's a huge problem. And I think it goes back to a lot of what we've talked about with autopilot and Tesla's refusal to use any other sensors besides cameras, which clearly are not going to be enough.
So, Michael, when somebody calls you up and says, "I'm a professional motorcyclist," do you immediately respond and say, "Mr. Knievel, is that you? Mr. Knievel?" No. Anyway.
No.
Sorry.
Evil Knievel and safety don't really go hand in hand.
Anyway, we're going to jump into recalls because I didn't realize the time. The time is flying by. Let's do some recalls. Ford, 105,322 vehicles because that's how they do it. The 2018 to 2020 Ford Expedition, same year as Lincoln Navigator. The driver seatbelt retractor pretensioner assembly is the issue. They were built outside of the suspect time window. They showed propensity for inadvertent deployment, which means that they just lock up on you while you're driving. Is that?
Yes, essentially the retractor pretensioner deploys when it's not supposed to and locks the seatbelt. It won't retract, it won't extend, which essentially it won't, you know, when you're in a crash, many vehicles have pretensioners that can actually tighten your seatbelt up before the crash. Can't tell if that's the case here, but essentially these seatbelts are becoming locked in place. You know, it's hard to tell from the report if this is happening, like if you get out of the vehicle and you get back in, if the seatbelt doesn't retract at all and you're just stuck with it in that one position, which is certainly a safety issue. But at any rate, it looks like if you have this problem and you own one of these vehicles, you're going to get an airbag malfunction light. That's the occupant restraint controller or the occupant restraint system noting that it's failing and telling you so that you'll know there's a problem here and that your pretensioner has already deployed, even though you weren't in a crash, and that you need to get this into your dealer for a fix. It looks like owners are going to be hearing about this as soon as next week, so keep your eye out for that. And it looks like the repair is going to be available shortly, so it's not going to. They already have retractors that were supposedly built right that are of the same type that are ready to be installed in your vehicle.
Well, and this is no excuse to not wear a seatbelt. Up next, Ford 4,163 vehicles, the 2024 to 2025 F-150. The 2024-2025 Expedition, the Lincoln Navigator, is an oil leak in the presence of an ignition source. So the engine cup plug hydraulic insertion press was misaligned, resulting in your car's going to catch on fire.
You're going to lose your oil, essentially. The engine oil plug is misaligned. You can lose your oil rapidly, and so you're looking at potential engine failure, your engine stalling, which is a safety issue. Also, if that oil comes in contact with hot engine or exhaust components, you can have fire. There are two problems here that can be caused by, you know, something that seems relatively simple, getting an oil plug to keep oil from running out of the engine. That one looks like you should have. You may have already received that notification is going to be coming at the end of May. So it looks like they may be taking some time to get this recall together.
All right, final recall, Fred. For the lightning round, who do you think the final recall is from? What car manufacturer?
Boom, 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 boom. I don't know. Boom, there's so many possibilities.
Ford. That's right.
Are you?
Oh, wait. No, I'm reading the same. No, you
said. Yeah, way to go.
Thing. Now, that's how you did things. Damn it.
Sorry. The final one was,
it was a BMW. Yeah.
Yeah, they had a starter generator issue.
Yeah, you sent me the wrong
there
link.
Was a fire issue on BMWs that was caused by a poorly manufactured starter generator.
Yeah, I'd love to tell you more information, but, you know, somebody put the wrong link and I thought it was Ford again. I mean, odds are it would be Ford. Yeah, we'll just say Ford.
Oh, and Ford reported 35 recalls in the first quarter of this year, which is an incredibly high number. I mean, I think last year total, they were around 70. They're already halfway there through the first quarter.
Yeah.
Ford. That's, Ford. You know, I've talked probably ad nauseum about recalls and whether a lot of recalls means you're producing quality cars or not, and whether a lot of recalls means you're just being better on safety. That answer is still to be determined, but just noting that Ford has a significant number of recalls reported so far.
All right. And that's it for this week's show. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for going to autosafety.org and clicking on donate. You do that while the car's warming up in your Piggly Wiggly parking lot. Boom. Haven't said that.
Oh, you got it. You got it. You nailed it.
Till next week. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, folks. We just finished recording the episode, but Michael came across a story way too important for us to ignore.
So last night, I think it was last night, 9:30 p.m. in Santa Monica on Monday, Waymo got stuck in a Chick-fil-A drive-thru, which is interesting, right?
Yeah. If you had that on your bingo card, I mean, congrats. You win. Waymo, Chick-fil-A, Santa Monica.
What could possibly go wrong?
All right. I'm going to hit stop so it doesn't delete our entire episode. Bye again.
Bye-bye.
For more information, visit www.autosafety.org.